This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There's a certain kind of cruelty that doesn't come with a weapon. It's quieter, colder. It shows up in court filings and legal motions years after the crime, when the world has mostly moved on. It's the kind of cruelty that says, I still get to control the narrative. Brian Koberger has always been that kind of cruel. Even now, sitting in a maximum security cell for the rest of his life, he's still trying to dictate the terms of his own accountability. And this time, he's doing it with what can only be described as his final insult to the families of the four young people he murdered. Let's get something straight up front. Brian Koberger is not some sort of misunderstood academic who lost his way. He is a convicted killer, a man who broke into an off-campus home on King Road in Moscow, Idaho, on a late November night in 2022. And he took the lives of four students, Kaylee Gonzalez, Madison Mogan, Zenner Kernodal, and Ethan Chapin. He's not awaiting trial. He's not alleged. He's guilty. And he's serving four consecutive life sentences plus 10 years. He's done. At least that's what most people thought when the gavel came down this past July. But apparently, Brian Koberger wasn't done. Because just recently, through his defense attorneys in early October of 25, he filed a new motion that left just about everyone, especially the victim's families, kind of stunned. In it, he argues that he shouldn't have to pay the restitution ordered by the court because the families of his victims received donations through GoFundMe. That's the reasoning of Lil Bri. Think about it for a second. The man who destroyed four families now wants to avoid paying them because other people stepped up to help. There isn't a clerical issue. It's not some minor legal technicality. It's psychological. It's about power. Even behind bars, Koberger is still grasping for control, trying to reduce what happened to a math problem. If strangers on the internet raise money to help these grieving parents travel to hearings, he says, then his debt is somehow erased. That's not legal logic. That's narcissism wearing a jumpsuit. And look, these families, they're not looking for a payday. They're fully expecting never to see the money come through. Because he doesn't have it. But the fact that this argument is even being made, that he would go to court and say, you know what? You don't deserve it because you got GoFundMe money. The monster is still alive, friends. It seems maybe some more canteens in that prison need to be filled to extinguish the monster. What say you? A normal document like this would lay it out very plainly. It would say something to the effect of, he's indigent, he can't pay. Anything that he does accumulate, if anything, over time in prison, yes, it will go to that. But no, this is basically kind of protecting his canteen to a certain extent as well, because that can be pilfered out if money were to happen to go into it. The court documents lay it out plainly. His defense claims the additional funds sought by prosecutors do not qualify as an economic loss under Idaho law because the families received extensive funds through multiple GoFundMe campaigns. In other words, they got help, so they don't need justice. His lawyers also argued he has no ability now or in the future to pay restitution, since he'll spend the rest of his life in prison. That part might be true. But here's the thing. Restitution isn't about whether you can pay today. It's about the acknowledgement that you owe. It's symbolic as much as it is financial. It's the court's way of saying you took something, you owe something, But Koberger, of course, doesn't see it that way. He never has. It's the same pattern that's followed him since the start of this case, probably since the start of his life, really. When the murders happened, investigators described the attack as one of the most methodical, cold, and deliberate crimes they've ever seen. There was nothing impulsive about it. It was planned, it was calculated, every move, every moment mapped out in the mind that believed itself smarter than everyone else. Koberger wasn't driven by emotion, he was driven by control, and that's exactly what this new filing represents, a man still refusing to give up control, even when it no longer matters. To understand just how absurd this motion is, you have to look at what the families have already endured. Since November of 2022, they've lived every parent's nightmare in full public view. They've sat through hearings, press conferences, and months of online speculation about the case. When the trial was moved across the state to Boise at Koberger's own request, mind you, they had to uproot their lives just to be there. That meant flights, hotels, missed work, the kind of financial and emotional exhaustion most of us can't even imagine. The GoFundMe campaigns weren't luxuries. They were survival tools, you piece of shit. They were the public saying, you shouldn't have to face this alone. The Gonzalez family raised around $85,000. The Mogan family raised about $48,000. There was even a joint campaign that brought in more money to help cover travel and accommodations. That money didn't erase their suffering. It barely covered the cost of showing up to witness it. And when Koberger struck a plea deal in July that spared him from the death penalty, the Gonzalez family announced they'd returned what remained of the funds, saying they no longer needed them since the trial would not go forward. They showed honor and decency in that one gesture than Koberger has shown in his entire life. And yet here he is, filing paperwork from a prison cell to say that they'd been helped enough. Can we just give him like a really long bed sheet, a rope, a knife, things he can self-destruct himself with and call it a day? Let's stop putting him on watch. Let's just put him on encourage. Here, I think we could use that in our prison system a little bit more. Lock somebody in a cage and don't put them on a watch to prevent them from taking themselves out. Put them in a system that encourages it. Because why? Why is he alive? So he can do this torture to other families, to the families that he has already tortured enough? So he can waste everyone's time and money and energy where they could be doing other things in their lives, virtually anything, watching paint dry, grass grow, anything far more important than giving this piece of shit one more second of their energy or brain power? This man is still trying to convince himself that the system owes him something, because that's what narcissists do. They don't apologize. They reframe, they twist, they rewrite the story until they're the victim of it. Let's put him and Donna Adelson in a cell together and see what happens. Put on a little Barry Manilow.
Hey, Donna, come on over here. It's Bri.
I could see that shit going down. When Judge Stephen Hippler sentenced Koberger, he ordered him to pay over $250,000 in state fines plus $20,000 in civil judgments for each family and nearly $29,000 to reimburse funeral expenses through the Idaho Crime Victim Compensation Fund. That restitution wasn't a request. It was part of the consequence. It wasn't a tangible part of the justice process. The acknowledgement that these families lost everything, the state later filed an additional $20,409 for Stephen Christie Gonzalez and another $6,920 for Madison Mogan's mother, Karen Laramie. Those additional costs were for travel, lodging, and the urns that now hold the ashes of the two best friends who should have been alive to see their college graduation. It's not extravagant. It's heartbreaking. And Koberger's response? Essentially, not my problem. It finally makes it clear that he doesn't just want to avoid paying. He wants to erase any symbolic acknowledgement of the harm he caused. He waived his right to appear at the hearing on the matter. No apology, no explanation, just another legal document filed by a man who treats empathy like it's beneath him. Psychologically, it is textbook. The narcissist offender's greatest fear isn't punishment, it's irrelevance. The moment the trial ended, Koberger stopped being the center of attention. He went from the suspect everyone's talking about to the inmate nobody's watching. This filing puts him back in that spotlight, if only for a moment. It's control through chaos. He can't control his environment anymore, but he can still manipulate the narrative. And that's what this motion is, a performance of self-pity disguised as legal argument. Inside the prison, reports say he's already been filing complaints about other inmates, about conditions, about treatment. It's the same personality trait that defined him outside those walls, grievance, the constant belief that the world is out to get him, that he's the smartest guy in the room and everyone else just doesn't get it. When you strip away his degrees and his courtroom composure, that's what's left. A deeply insecure boy hiding behind prosecutorial language. Using bureaucracy the same way he once used his criminology studies to feel superior. Meanwhile, the families he's targeted with this motion have been living with the fallout in real time. They've had to bury their children, endure public scrutiny, and relive the worst days of their lives every time his name hits the news. And now they're being asked to justify why the generosity of strangers doesn't cancel out what he owes them. It's re-traumatization by legal proxy. You can see the emotional whiplash in their statements. The Gonzalez family recently shared that both Kaylee and Madison were finally transferred into their urns, a moment they described as happy and sad. They said the girls will never be apart, that they'll always be together in their two homes, just like they were growing up. That's where the energy is. Love, remembrance, connection. And there's Koberger, arguing over dollars and decimals. It's a contrast that tells you everything about who these people are. At its core, this isn't about money, it's about moral responsibility. The restitution order was never going to fix what he did. It wasn't supposed to. It's symbolic, a small but critical acknowledgement that when you destroy lives, you owe something in return. You don't get to walk away clean because the internet was kind to your victims. And yet that's exactly what Koberger's defense is arguing, that kindness from others should somehow erase accountability for the killer. It's not just offensive, it's psychologically revealing. Because to the narcissist, any act of grandiosity towards others feels like a personal attack. It reminds them that they're not the center of compassion. They're the reason compassion had to exist in the first place. Legally speaking, the motion probably won't go far. Idaho's restitution laws give judges wide discretion to decide what qualifies as an economic loss. But the damage isn't in the outcome. It's in the act itself. The decision to make these families fight one more time, to drag them back to a courtroom, to make them hear his name again, to force them to confront the fact that he's still out there, still manipulating, still trying to exert control from behind a locked door. That's what narcissistic offenders do when their physical control is gone. They weaponize procedure. They become experts in wasting time. They know they can't win, but they can still make everyone else lose a little more peace. It's the same psychological framework that defined Koberger's crimes. When he couldn't belong, he destroyed. When he couldn't control others, he punished them. Now that he can't move freely, he finds control in the only way left, through paperwork, filings, motions, each one a little reminder that he still exists. It's easy to dismiss this as a meaningless stunt, but for the families, it's not meaningless. It's a reminder that justice doesn't end with a sentence. It drags on in the slow grind of bureaucracy, in the small cruelties of a legal motion like this one. They already had to fight to get to this point, to see him convicted, to hear the words, life without parole. Now they have to fight again just to hold on to what's already been ordered. And for what? For a man who refuses to face what he did, who refuses to speak at sentencing, who's never once expressed remorse, who seems constitutionally incapable of understanding that accountability isn't optional? That's what makes this so infuriating. Not just the legal audacity, but the psychological emptiness behind it. Koberger doesn't feel shame. He feels slighted. In his mind, he's the one being wronged, forced to pay for something that's already taken care of. It's the same lack of empathy that drove him. The night of the murders. Different setting, same disease. In the end, this filing tells us something important, not about the law, but about the man. Even in prison, stripped of freedom and status, Koberger is still revealing who he really is. He's a thing. He's not a person. He's a thing who can't tolerate the idea of others reclaiming power. He can't stand in a world moved on without him. With the families who found community and strength that people donated to them out of compassion. So he tries to weaponize that compassion, to turn it against them, to make it somehow invalid. Because if he can do that, even for a second, then he's back in control. And that's his real currency, not money, but manipulation. But here's the real truth. His control is gone. He can file all the motions he wants, but he's never getting out of that cell. The world isn't bending to his will anymore. The only thing he controls now is the illusion that he still matters, and that every motion he files makes that illusion a little thinner, a little sadder, a little more transparent. And we'll keep watching him. We'll keep watching him till the day that Shiv lands in his brain. The families, meanwhile, will keep doing what they've done since that November night, showing up, supporting each other, living their lives in defiance of what he tried to destroy. Because their strength doesn't come from GoFundMe. It comes from love. And that's something Brian Koberger will never understand. He may have studied criminal psychology, but he never learned the most basic truth of it. Real accountability isn't about the law. It's about the soul. And in that sense, his life sentence started long before he stepped into a courtroom. What's left of Brian Koberger is a stack of paper and a hollow argument. The people he hurt will go on living. He'll keep filing. That's the difference between the living and the dead. Between those who move forward and those who are forever stuck in the moment they decided to destroy everything good around them. And maybe that's the only kind of justice he's capable of understanding now. The slow, quiet realization that the world no longer cares what Brian Koberger wants. Give me your thoughts in the comments section. On YouTube, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi to find us there. Do the same search where we get podcasts so you can take us with you. On the go in audio form, wherever you get podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, you name it, we are there. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. And please, if you're enjoying our content and the work we're putting into this, please do hit subscribe. That helps us out a great deal. So please do that so you don't miss anything. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.